thank you, Rosie, for that very kind introduction. I'm so happy to be here. A bit nervous about being the first, but anyway. So I'm going to start to the beginning, the inspiration for the book about hardy women. And it began with a pilgrimage to Max Gate, which is the house that Thomas Hardy built for himself after he'd become fairly famous. So I'm going to share a slide with you here. And I wanted to just share this moment of the inspiration of the attic room. So I had the tour around Max Gate, and it was as suitably gloomy as you'd expect and dusty. And it was incredible, really, to see the room that Tess was written, composed in. But the room that really captured my imagination was the attic room. Probably, I'm a huge fan of Jane Eyre, so I instantly think of Mad Women in the Attic. And when we were shown around Emma Hardy, Thomas Hardy's first wife's attic room, she had two rooms. You can see one of the rooms here. It really fired my imagination. It really made me want to know more about why she went up and lived in the attic. She did so for 14 years. Now, at the time, I did not know that his second wife, Florence, also ended up banishing herself to the attic, which seems really unfortunate that not one but two wives would do so, but they did. So I was really intrigued by the story behind Emma and then later Florence. So that was that moment of inspiration. I didn't really know what I was going to do at the time. I just thought I want to just know a little bit more about Emma's story. So that really was the inspiration. And then I had another sort of, it was almost like a day vision. I was thinking a lot about Martha Brown. And Martha Brown was the woman whom Thomas Hardy saw executed when he was just 16. He was sitting in the front row in Dorchester, and he'd made quite a special effort to go and see this woman being hanged. And it was a very erotic, strange erotic experience for Thomas Hardy, partly because her dress, it was raining and her dress clung to all her contours of her body. And I had this sort of day vision. I could almost hear the rain, the August rain, and see Martha Brown's face. And Thomas Hardy was quite obsessed with this story. He would talk about it even up until he was in his 80s. He said the executioner's mask that was put over her face, this white linen mask, was see-through because of the rain. So you could see her features. She was very beautiful. And she wore her best dress for her execution, her black silk dress. Because of the rain, it really molded to the curves of her body. So he found it a very sort of shameful, erotic, almost exhilarating experience. And also, he felt full of guilt and shame and remorse. So that day vision was, I knew that would be the prologue. I thought, this seems such a vivid place to start. And it also struck me at that time that the one thing we don't see in the Great Tess of the D'Urbervilles is Tess's execution. That is off stage, so we don't see that. And to me, it felt as though Hardy just couldn't really revisit the pain of that moment that really sort of tormented and tortured him. So it was, I had those two vignettes really, the attic room, the mad woman. Was she mad? Some people said Emma was mad, and was she another Bertha Mason shut up, or what was the story? But then my research took me to other stories. I'm putting up a slide here of Thomas Hardy's mother, Jemima, and his sister Kate. I think quite a few of us who like Hardy know about his relationship with his mother. He adored his mother, and he explores this incredibly close relationship in The Return of the Native and in other ones, novels. And she was a really a force of nature, formidable. She, as you can see her there, she's reading a book. She always literally had her nose in a book. And the painting that you see in front of you was painted by Thomas Hardy's elder sister, Mary, who was a really, she was an amateur painter, but we never see her paintings. We never hear her voice. So I was very keen to restore the voice of the sisters. On my right hand, you'll see Kate Hardy, who was Thomas Hardy's younger sister, who was also a school teacher like his sister, Mary. And he used the lives of these women who were school teachers, and they were hard, hard lives, inspired him to write the character of Sue Bridehead, who's one of my personal favorite Hardy heroines. And his second wife, Florence, was also a school teacher. And he doesn't glamorize the lives of a trainee teacher or a school teacher. And Thomas Hardy's sisters had really difficult lives. So I really love digging deep into the lives of what is it like to be a rural schoolmistress. And we're lucky enough that fairly recently, one of the logbooks in Mary's school has been rediscovered. So it was very, very gripping reading for me because it was a real sense of what the day-to-day life was like in a schoolroom where half the time the children aren't there because it's harvest or they have to look after the baby. So in the logbook, it would say there's wonderful excuse like looking after the baby, so missed school. So I was really, really fascinated and intrigued by their lives. And it became a very personal book for me. And I think to some extent, all biography is autobiography. I'm very interested in the lives of working class women. It's my own background. I think often working class women's voices are not sufficiently heard. So I was very keen to restore some of that to really get a sense of what it was like. And most of the women in Thomas Hardy's lives, well, they were hard grafters. And they often did extra jobs to supplement the family income. So Thomas Hardy's mother, for instance, was a very good seamstress, as indeed were many of his family and cousins. And she would embroider gloves and she would make dresses. So I'm always very interested in people say, oh, women didn't really work or they were raising babies. Well, no, that's not true. Actually, most women took in some kind of work. So I really wanted to get their voices across. So that was really very sort of important to me, telling their stories. The next slide, and just really reflecting on that, what does it mean when we talk about family law, LORE, not law? I'm again fascinated by the way that women tell stories and they come down through families. Just one instant in Thomas Hardy's life was he had a secret affair with a woman you see in front of you. Her name is Eliza Nichols. And for years, scholars did not believe this woman and her descendants who said, my grandmother was engaged to Thomas Hardy. He jilted her. He gave her a ring. And people dismissed her story. And it wasn't until fairly recently that we discovered indubitably that the story was true. And that was because one of his religious books surfaced in which he'd written annotations. And it's beyond doubt now. But I'm fascinated by the fact that people tend not to believe women's stories. They say, oh, it's just family gossip. But it's my experience that when we have these secrets in families, families don't talk about them very much in a gossipy manner. It's something to be ashamed of. And in a way, that's something that Hardy really exploits in Tess of the D'Urbervilles, with the whole idea of the illegitimate servant girl who's been seduced by an aristocrat and how that affects the family. And I've just put up a poem. I'm not going to read it. I don't have time. I'm keeping to time carefully. But it's a beautiful poem about the breakup of the relationship with Eliza Nichol. And it was a sonnet sequence, the sonnet sequence that he wrote about Eliza, and it's told from the perspective of Eliza. So it's called the She to Him sonnets. And he destroyed most of them, but there's five or six left, and they are superb poems. And he wrote them when he was 25. And it's always he's doing the breaking up and she is at the receiving end, but it's entirely from her point of view. And I love the way Hardy can do that. He treated some of the women in his life incredibly badly, but he wrote about them so sympathetically. And I think this was just the kernel, the paradox really of what I was trying to do was to try and discover why did he treat women so badly, but then write about them so powerfully. So that was Eliza. So quickly coming to the two Hardy wives, Emma and Florence. So Emma in the sky blue dress, when he courted her in that dress makes an appearance in A Pair of Blue Eyes, which is the novel that's about their courtship in Cornwall. And again, because his mother was a seamstress, there was always dresses around in the house. He just had such an acute eye for women's clothes. And I love that in the novels, how he writes very specifically about dress. We think of Tess's white muslin dress with the red ribbon in her hair, or we think of Bathsheba's scarlet red riding jacket, or Elfriede's sky blue, blue, sometimes sky blue dress. This is a man who was around a lot of clothes and was very susceptible to female clothing. And then there's Florence, who was much, much younger than Hardy. He really did move her in when Emma had gone up into the attic. And quite recently, we've had some new letters surfaced from Florence, which many people have said, "Oh, what kind of relationship was it?" Well, it was clear from these letters that have recently been discovered that they had a really incredibly romantic, intense sexual relationship. It wasn't just a caretaker looking after an older man. So there's been some new evidence, new letters come to life. So again, I'm really trying to get inside the head of these women and tell their stories. And I'm just going to move on to the final muse, who was Gertrude Bugler. And she was this incredibly beautiful woman who played the part of Tess for the Hardy Players. And Hardy first met her when she played the part of Marty South when she was 16 for the Hardy Plays. And he didn't know at the time that she was the daughter of the woman who inspired Tess of the Devil, the real woman who was a milkmaid called Augusta, who was incredibly beautiful. And you can see here how beautiful her daughter is. So Hardy fell hard for the last muse, who was Gertrude, who was only 16, many, many years younger than him, but became quite obsessed. And this gave a lot of pain to Florence, Hardy's second wife. So much so, there was a huge scene when Florence went to see Gertrude Bugler and begged her to stay away from her husband, because she felt that her husband's obsession was harming their marriage and harming themselves. So I really wanted to tell Gertrude's story too, and see things from her point of view. So that was the idea of the story. I hope I've given justice to those women's voices, those invisible women who didn't really have a chance for their voices to be heard. So thank you for listening. And if you do, you're a Hardy lover. If you're not a Hardy lover, I hope you enjoy the book.